Welcome to In Plain Sight, Jeremy here in Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network. And please, as usual, go to republicbroadcasting.org and smash that donate button. Send the much needed fundage to keep free speech alive for your children and grandchildren in this era of threatened free speech. More important than ever to support this network. Make your check or money order payable to RBN. Mail it to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Dial in your credit or credit card number, credit and debit card number to 1-800-724-2719, and a friendly operator will be standing by to take your money. If you're an avid listener, you should donate, especially if you're an avid caller. Please donate, and I encourage all hosts to donate and support at least an hour of your favorite broadcast. An hour costs about $30 for an hour, and I recently supported the second hour of Road Warrior Radio this past Friday, Chris Hinckley's show. My 30 bucks are in, so gauntlet laid to all hosts out there. And to all listeners, donate to the station. And especially if you like the Patrick and Jeremy show, we need sponsorship. We need some fundage. It doesn't go to us. It goes to RBN so that we can do our free speech thing on Tuesday at 9 p.m. Central and Wednesday at 12 noon on the Bugle Central. So please get that money in there. We will be waiting anxiously with bated breath. Another person who's waited with bated breath is my co-host tonight, Patrick Slattery. Patrick, welcome.
Thank you very much, Jeremy.
Isn't it important to sponsor free speech? It seems like under this administration, it's more threatened than ever, but only certain types of free speech.
Yeah, the type that we do.
That's correct. We're going to cover some stuff here. It's starting with college campuses, but it could go much further than that, as precedents, legal precedents, are being laid. And as we're going to cover, since we've been under the Patriot Act and under emergency powers for decades, the Patriot Act was what? Right after September 11th, 2001.
That's correct.
And when did Congress declare war last? World War II, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so what are all these conflicts?
Yeah, Germany, Japan, and Italy, I believe Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, something like that.
So we've been under some sort of emergency powers where we can do war, but it's not called war. It doesn't have to be declared by Congress. The president can move troops. I mean, you look at Korea, Vietnam, all of the things that happened in the 80s, I lose track because I was a child. The Iran-Contra thing, the first and second Gulf Wars, Afghanistan, and then even supporting proxy wars for the last, how long has it been, 3 years since the Ukraine-Russia conflict, where the U.S. has first indirectly and then just outwardly directly support of the Ukraine. That's been going on. So it seems like perpetual war without declaring war.
Yeah, it's been ramping up. After the Vietnam War, there was reluctance to do that type of thing. Now, there was still the CIA stuff going on. The CIA was involved here and there, trying to overthrow countries and whatnot. But sending the American military off to do combat operations, that had become difficult. That was the lesson of the Vietnam War. So Ford didn't do it. Carter didn't do it. Reagan, he sent the Marines off as peacekeepers to Lebanon, where they weren't wanted. And in 1983, there was an attack on, or suicide bomb, or a truck bomb presumably suicide, truck bomb that exploded in the Marine barracks and killed like 250 Marines, something like that. And they never knew exactly who did it. It's kind of blamed on Hezbollah, even though Hezbollah didn't quite exist yet, but like on the predecessors of Hezbollah. But Caspar Weinberger said that they never really knew who did it. And then a day or two after, Reagan immediately withdrew, but then also to kind of distract the public, a day or two later sent the American military to the tiny Caribbean island of Grenada to overtake it and to take it over and have a glorious victory. So we had this glorious victory in Grenada. Yay! We won! And unfortunately, that kind of set a precedent that then the next administration, George H.W. Bush, he sent the Marines or the military into Panama in 1989, and then the first Gulf War, and then we're off and running and haven't stopped since.
Well, and those actions were protested and could be protested, but until the Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism Act of 2001, they really couldn't legally target American citizens. But since then, they can. It's an extension of the administrative state, which was formed, 1947, 48, right around in there. Basically gives the government the authority to violate the civil liberties of Americans if they are deemed domestic terrorists. And it was first targeted to, you know, Muslims that were in America shortly after 9/11. But now it can be expanded to anyone, anyone that's deemed a terrorist or supporters of terrorism. I think we saw a little bit of this with January 6th protesters. Their civil liberties were definitely violated in the name of insurrection. So it wasn't exactly terrorism, but it set a terrible precedent. But today, right now, it's focused on college students that are holding green cards, or they're some sort of immigrant that is taking advantage of the American education system. And the question that I want to ask as we cover these articles is, can that be expanded then to regular Americans? Since Hezbollah has been designated a terrorist organization, can they violate the rights, the First Amendment rights of regular Americans that maybe would just be against genocide in Palestine?
Well, that's where it's going. Yeah.
I think that's, as Daniel would say, the prophet Daniel, that's the handwriting on the wall. Well,
that's where it's going.
So last year, the AP, this is January 24, had an article, there's a wave of new bills to define anti-Semitism in these three states, and they could become lawmakers in more than half a dozen U.S. states are pushing laws to define anti-Semitism, triggering debates about free speech and bringing complicated world politics into state houses. So, just to summarize the article, this is obviously talking about the college students that protested the genocide of Palestinians since October 7th and since the retaliation of Hezbollah and then the genocide that Israel committed to Palestinian people, women and children, hospitals, shelters, all of the like. Any of these students now, all of these students, and so far it's just been the ones that are immigrants holding visas or some sort of legal status in the United States, they're being gone after and actually arrested. And I looked up where this is at currently as of February of 2025. It's in House Committee on the Judiciary. So these particular states that are redefining anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism as anti-Semitism. And of course, you know, this is to target these type of students. Once this becomes law, I wonder, you know, if it could expand and target students that are legal U.S. citizens. You know, that's the next step.
So, got this. Yeah. There's an AP News article, and the AP has just become complete trash. It's, you know, you look at the headlines, and you might as well be looking at the Huffington Post. It's like, you know, things like Trump tells another lie about such and such. So they have given up any pretense of being neutral or objective or just the facts, ma'am. Now, this article, I'm reading down the article, and they're referencing the October 7th, okay? The October 7th attack, in which Hamas killed some 1,200 people, mostly civilians, and took 250 hostages back to Gaza, which sparked a war that has killed more than 26,000 Palestinians. Okay, this is an article from, okay, well, January 30th, so it's not exactly new. But, you know, here's the thing. The Israeli sources acknowledge that more or less half of the Israelis who died were not killed by Hamas. They were killed by the Israeli military. You know, maybe some in friendly fire, but a large amount as a result of the Hannibal Directive. The Hannibal Directive is an Israeli policy by which, rather than allowing Israeli Jews to be captured, they kill them. The Israeli military themselves will kill Israeli Jews, so that they cannot be used as hostages, because a living Israeli Jew in the hands of Israel's enemy, the exchange rate, if you're, you know, swapping prisoners, the exchange rate can be 100 to 1 or more. And so from the point of view of the hostage's family, the hostage is worth a huge amount. From the point of view of the Israeli state, the hostage isn't worth nearly that much. And so, you know, there's this divergence in value, right? And so it's been acknowledged by Israeli sources that more or less half of the people who, the Israelis who died, the Jews who died, were killed by the Israeli military. That's one thing. Another thing, mostly civilians. This is the way this has been going on forever. The way they define civilians. Okay, if you're Palestinian and you have any kind of relationship with Hamas, for instance, then you're Hamas. It doesn't matter if you're you know, on the beach with your children in a bathing suit. You're Hamas, okay? If you're Israeli, now remember, they have universal conscription, and so unless you're ultra-Orthodox, all Israelis go into the military, and for men, it's, 4 years active duty for men and 2 years for women, something like that. Women also go in, and then men remain in the reserves until their 40s, sometime in their 40s. I think women until like their late 20s and men until their 40s. So the thing is, most of these people, most young Israelis, are part of the military. They may be active duty, but not in uniform. They may be reserves, but they've got this current relationship with the Israeli military, and yet they're always described as civilians unless they're walking around in uniform. So this is the second thing. We're just talking about not even one sentence. This is just part of a sentence. So that's another complete distortion of reality. And then the third one, which sparked a war that has killed more than 26,000 Palestinians. Well, the Palestinian authorities were counting, and I'm sure undercounting, the number of deaths that they had documented. And sometime, oh, wait a minute, is this from 2000? Oh, Jeremy, this article is from 2024, not 2025.
Yeah, that I mentioned that when we introduced it, and that it's an old article, and that currently the. Okay. No, it's okay. Your points are all. Yeah, I wanted to.
The third point where they said 26,000, maybe that's what the count was at that point. But the thing is, the death count just stopped about 9 months ago. You know, they got up to 40,000 something, and it basically just stopped because the people who do the counting have been killed, and there was so much rubble, and so they just kind of stopped it. And you've been hearing for the past 9 months, 40,000. Well, the death toll is probably well over 100,000.
Well, yeah. How many children, women, and even men are pulled from the rubble that were still buried at the time? I know the article is a year old, and a little more than a year old. And I wanted to use it to sort of set. I wanted to use it to set us up for what we're going to be talking about that's happening today. I mean, this was under Biden last year, and the states, Georgia is one of them, that are redefining what anti-Semitism is according to the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism according to this definition, and there are particular states, Georgia being one, that, you know, are going to put this in litigation. And right now it's at the House committee level as of February of this year. But they're already acting on it. I mean, they're already acting against, they're taking the low-hanging fruit and acting against students holding visas, right? And that once these states codify this into law, it could go even further than that. Now, will all states do that? I don't know. But that's sort of this article is a setup for what, you know, I wanted to get into in the rest of the show, more current headlines. And your points that you made, your three main points, they're very salient. They're very well taken by myself and I'm sure the listening audience. But the average run-of-the-mill Trump supporter doesn't care about the details. They're so pro-Trump. They're pro-American and they're pro-Israel. And that's been conflated. Being pro-American and pro-Israel has been conflated in their minds under what we would call the right, the type of supporters, the type of voters that cheer on, you know, this pushback to woke stuff, that think Elon Musk is the greatest thing since sliced bread, that's coming in here and doing all of these great things. They don't care about the details. Anyway, we're coming up on the break. Let's get back to this on the other side.
Summer's gone, winter's in your house. I can feel the thunderstorms inside.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombi Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombi detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
If you're an avid reader or lover of history or both, then I invite you to purchase Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy. The book delves into a controversial and often overlooked chapter of the American Civil War, specifically focusing on Union war crimes against Southern sympathizers and civilians in occupied Missouri. It centers on the massacre that took place on Christmas Day, 1863, in Ripley County, Missouri, where Union Major James Wilson's 3rd Missouri State Militia Cavalry attacked a gathering of Confederate supporters, including men, women, and children, and the elderly. Lacy aims to shed light on this event known as the Wilson Massacre by presenting a narrative that challenges the conventional historical accounts by providing evidence from local documents, eyewitnesses, newspaper articles, and military records. The book has been praised for its effort to bring forth a nuanced understanding of the brutality of the Civil War in Missouri, emphasizing the need to acknowledge all aspects of this tumultuous period. Lacy's work is commended for its thorough research and commitment to uncovering obscured truths in American history. And you can purchase it at foothillsmedia.net, foothillsmedia.net. To purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozark.
Awake every morning and the cold winds cover me. All I've got.
Coming back to the Patrick and Jeremy Show live on your Tuesday night drive. If you want to weigh in, 512-248-8252. We'll be taking selected calls. And we're setting up the conversation with this article from AP a year ago talking about the definition of anti-Semitism and that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Let me specifically mention the Georgia legislature. Who was it? Esther Panitich, the only Jewish member of Georgia's legislature. All right, she states that for anybody that didn't think that anti-Zionism could cross into anti-Semitism, the rest of the world could see that it had. And Georgia's legislator sponsored a bill that would redefine anti-Zionism as anti-Semitism, and Governor Brian Kemp signed that into law last January at the end of the month. So it's a thing in Georgia now, of all states. This is something I wanted to bring up, is that, you know, that's a relatively conservative state, I think. And all of the people on the left, we're going to use left and right loosely here, just bear with me. The people that supported the Summer of Floyd BLM and supported the COVID measures, they're the people now that seems like they're totally going against the genocide in Palestine. And they have no representation at all, which is why the Democrat Party pretty much collapsed in the last 2 to 3 years, well, since October 7th. And then all of the hardcore right-wingers that are against wokeism, they're supporting this rabid, you know, blinding support of Israel, and they don't care about the details. That's an interesting thing that we've talked about many times. And I think that this, you know, law in Georgia is testimony to that. What do you think?
Yeah, so who was it that termed the phrase wedge issue? And a wedge issue was an issue that could be used to I guess, clarify the division between the right and the left, the Democrats and the Republicans. This is like a really bad issue as a wedge issue. I don't know if you'd want to call it something else, because you really don't want the sides – you don't want this issue to have our side on so many of the other issues, you know, our side being the people who are against wokeism, for instance, you don't want them to be lined up for Israel, and you don't want them to be lined up against free speech. And that's what's going on here. And I don't know. I don't want to blame this on women, because it's not. But you do, you see an EU that's run by women that has attacked free speech and is gung-ho for war in Ukraine. And then you're seeing these women. So Pam Bondi at Attorney General, Kristi Noem. This article also references some assistant secretary. What was her name? It's got like an Irish name or something. I was just looking at her. She's young and cute, and I don't know how old she is. It could be an old picture. But what was her name? McLaughlin. And yeah, Trisha McLaughlin. What the hell is going on here? And they're shutting down our free speech and deporting these student visa holders or green card holders. But of course they're coming after us next. Who, you know, do RBN hosts or other people who are published on Ron Unz's website, people who are the guest list of the Here Comes the Judge show. I mean, these people, I mean, we've already been targeted. We were targeted after the Charlottesville by the Trump first administration. So yeah, of course they're coming after us. I think it's clear.
Interesting point you made about the women on both sides. You know, the same side that would be against genocide, a lot of them, you know, a lot of women would also be for unlimited abortion. That's another wedge issue, isn't it? Abortion. But yet, you know, you would think that. But women on the right seem to ignore that issue, because the same Trump supporters that are for basically genocide, I don't know how else to say it, Israel's genocide of the Palestinians, they're very much against abortion. And they're for limiting abortion to, like, life of the mother and maybe even incest and rape. But, you know, in Kentucky, it's not even – it's strictly life of the mother in Kentucky so far. And that's being discussed in the courts right now. But that's a very inconsistent position, isn't it, that you're against the genocide of infants, but you're for the genocide of children and women and regular civilians in Palestine. Very inconsistent. Does not compute.
Yeah.
All right. Back on the other side of the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
WB10.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Back on your Tuesday night broadcast to Patrick and Jared Plott. I just wanted to refine my point a little bit more and get your comments before we move on. The female demographic of the electorate is very interesting to me. And this could expand into the males as well, but we were talking about females. Females on the left, that would support, you know, child trannies and homo rights, BLM, and unlimited abortion. They're against the genocide in Palestine. That's inconsistent. And also an inconsistency is females on the right, who would usually be for Israel and for traditional Christian values. They support the genocide in Palestine, by default supporting Israel, if nothing else. But yet most of them are against unlimited abortion. Very big inconsistency, and I didn't want to let that, you know, go by. I didn't want to just gloss over that. Give me your thoughts on that, and then we can move on if you want to.
Well, I don't talk much about abortion. I've got ambivalent feelings about it. The first thing that comes to mind is I'm so sick of it in American politics. It's almost as if I'm just like, okay, just you guys just make up your mind and I'll go along with it. You know, I'm kind of sick of it, but it's dominated American politics. It's been kind of like a classic wedge issue. If a wedge issue is like you're trying to drive a wedge into your opponent so you can, you know, split off some of your opponent's camp and get them to join your camp. And I guess abortion, there maybe the Democrats who are pro-abortion use it as a wedge issue to maybe split off some non-evangelical Republican women, you know, by emphasizing that. I think There may have been times earlier in history when it was used maybe perhaps the other way, but I think this is the way it's used now. to call it genocide, blacks, people like Kanye West or other blacks, black conservatives will call abortion genocide because of the high proportion of black women or black pregnancies that end in abortion. Well, of course, blacks get pregnant a lot more, so there's a lot more pregnancies that can end in abortion. White women don't get pregnant nearly as often as black women. But black women have a lot of abortions. Babies, I mean, calling it infanticide might be a little easier than genocide. But, you know, if you're black, you could call it genocide. If you're white, you know, well, is it part of, if you're a white of the disposition that this is a Jewish pushed policy and the idea is to reduce the white birth rate, I guess you could call it genocide from that point of view as well. But I don't know. As public policy, if you got a situation where the public has been, since the 1960s, it's been indoctrinated into free love and all of this. I watched last night, just out of nostalgia and curiosity, I watched the very first episode, the pilot episode of Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. And I got about 15 minutes into it. And there was, in the opening dialogue between Rowan and Rowan was a straight man. Martin was the funny guy. Martin is talking about spending time at a nudist camp. And there was just so much innuendo and even beyond innuendo. And this would have been, what, late 1960s. So they've been pushing this culture. This is culture pushed from above of free sex and free love and sex as recreation. And then if you've got a situation as sex as recreation, you're going to get a whole bunch of unwanted pregnancies. And, you know, then what? To have abortion illegal in a society where there's more moral restraints, common religious restraints, popular moral constraints on free sex. That's, you know, it's one thing, but if you've got a culture in which teenagers are shamed for being virgins, I don't know, what do you do? So that's where I'm at. I'm just going to kick it back to you.
Yeah, since the 60s revolution, you have a culture where free sex and free love is advocated. And then, you know, also no consequences is advocated. And I think that's what leads up to the abortion debate of today. And also the debate of welfare. And, you know, at first it was targeted to the black community to get them, a slave to the Democrat Party through welfare. I think... who was it, LBJ, that made the famous statement? And that's, as poverty and the gangster rap culture has pushed into the white people of European descent, you know, of low income, that culture is sort of spread to white people now. So it's not just a black problem anymore. Even though, as you pointed out, blacks tend to procreate more. They tend to reproduce more than whites, maybe because of testosterone levels or whatever. But it's a problem shared by both ethnic groups is, I think, the point I'm getting at. But we don't have to spend a lot of time on this. We have a caller if you want to go to Vinny.
Yes, please. Let's go.
Vinny in Indiana, welcome to the show.
Vinny?
Hey, Vinny.
Are you back home again?
Maybe he's like, Indiana wants me and I don't want to go back there.
Yeah, he's back home again in Indiana. Which, if you don't know the reference, that's a song. It was apparently Louis Armstrong's favorite song. It's an old jazz standard.
Wow.
Yeah, Dixieland.
Well, yeah. Vinny, you're Vinny from Indiana, you're up on the call screen. If you want to break in, just break in.
Yeah, hello.
Time.
Hey. I hear you guys. I hear you.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
How's the moonlight on the Wabash? Yeah.
Hello?
We hear you.
Yeah, I hear you. You're mentioning the censorship issue. I wonder what you think of this this appointment of his name is Yehuda Kaplan as replacing I can't remember her name, the nasty Jewish woman who went after David Irving as the anti-Zionism czar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, we hear you.
Okay. And also, there's an article on the Under Review about Palantir and how it's being used to spy on people. It came off of Kevin McDonald's website, the Occidental Observer. It's called Profiling Palantir. It's by Janko Vukic. I think that's a pen name. But it's just incredibly scary how much Palantir and Alex Karp and all of these people and how they're spying on Americans, and they're really spying on everybody globally. So, you know, the power to shut down free speech is just incredibly scary.
I'm aware of Palantir primarily because Nick Fuentes has been talking about Palantir for a long, long time. That's where I first heard about it. It's a company that was at least co-founded by Peter Thiel, who was Elon Musk's co-founder for PayPal. I guess the two of them, maybe somebody else did PayPal. So Peter Thiel, I think he's Jewish. He's often referred to as
Jewish.
And he's gay. And he he's a big billionaire. So he did PayPal. He's involved in a lot of Wall Street finance stuff. And so he's got some hedge funds associated with him and other financial firms. And Vice President Vance is a Peter Thiel protege. So he recruits and funds conservative or, left right-wing politicians of a particular sort. I think, what's the guy's name? Joe Kemp, who was a special forces officer in Iraq, who is now the chief of staff for Tulsi Gabbard, I believe. And he's another one of these Peter Thiel-linked politicians. And Palantir, I guess it's a software company that concentrates on like cybersecurity things. And so this, I've looked into it, but mostly I've been hearing for the past couple of years, Nick Fuentes rail about Palantir and Peter Thiel and the hooks that they have in, various politicians, so somebody like, Vance, who wrote, he wrote a book about how he was poor growing up. He grew up in Appalachia area of Ohio, raised by his grandmother. Vance isn't his actual, I think is Vance his grandmother's name, and he adopted it as a 28-year-old or something. But he'd, he'd gone into the Marines, came out of the Marines, and then I guess got into an elite school. Did he get into Yale or something? And then got hooked up with, around graduation time, got hooked up with Peter Thiel, who gave him a job at a financial firm where he could make a whole bunch of money. And so, you have somebody like Vance, who in the context of this administration is probably moving the center of gravity in a more positive direction than people like Hegseth or Kristi Noem or Bondi. He's probably still a voice of reason, but he's part of this Peter Thiel network. So that's what I know or think I know about it. So I'll kick it back to you guys.
Jeremy?
Yeah. Yeah, Vance, the modern day Crusader Deus Vault tattooed on his body. God wills it.
Not Vance. Hegseth. Hegseth.
Oh, Hegseth has that. Hegseth has that. Yeah. Vance is along the same lines, I do believe.
Yeah.
Vance.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think Vance has the same kind of Christian Zionist views, and I don't know what his religious outlook is, but he doesn't seem to wear it on his sleeve the way Hegseth does, and I guess Hegseth needs sleeves to cover all his tattoos.
Yeah, this guy, this Yehuda Kaplan. I can't find the article. There was an article on UNS about how he's basically another functionary of Miriam Adelson, I guess. And he gave speeches. If you listen to replays of some of those speeches, are really there's something that's going to send the RBN crowd going crazy, because he talks about the no-hide laws and things like that. I mean, this guy is something else. And he's a really close. He's a Chabad Lubavitcher, and he's a very he was a guy standing next to Trump when they visited Rebbe Schneerson's grave.
Yeah. You get so these really extreme. Yeah.
He sounds really worse extreme than Deborah Lipstadt.
And he says there's no such thing as Palestine. Did. You know, these people demonstrating in favor of Palestine, they've got it wrong because Palestine never existed.
Yeah. You know, there's that kind of brings up something. I don't know if you listened to Mark Dankoff's show when I talked to him. I was able to talk to him back and forth about 15, 20 minutes. And I brought up this propaganda series on Amazon Prime. It's called House of David. And it was financed by the Israel, and is produced by the Irwin brothers, who do a lot of Christian films in the U.S. They made a biopic on the Arizona Cardinals quarterback Kurt Warner. They've had a lot of very successful films. I mean, they're good filmmakers, and it's kind of the Book of Samuel meets kind of Game of Thrones, and it covers Saul and David up to the killing of Goliath. And then there's going to be like three or four different 8-part series of this. But it's incredible. Like I said to Mark Dankoff, it's incredibly well done, ultra Zionist propaganda. And, Mark Dankoff asked the question, and it's something maybe you could talk to him about, because he's got an invitation to go to Iran. And he was asking me what do I think he could contribute to going to Iran that Scott Ritter or Douglas McGregor, if they were invited and talk to the Iranians, what he could contribute. And I think, he has a very good knowledge of the Christian right, and particularly Christian Zionism, and how it differs from, traditional Protestant evangelical Christianity. And the fact that there's so much money from Israeli Zionist causes being pumped into the John Hagees and all that, and people don't understand that Miriam Adelson, she doesn't just control Congress. Like Thomas Massey says, Dankoff down in Texas, she owns this Texas state legislature. She owns the Dallas Mavericks. She can get them to build a casino for her in Texas. She every single state legislator almost in Texas has had a flight to go kiss the Wailing Wall. You can protest against freedom of speech, protest against U.S. getting into a war with Iran, and you go meet your state legislator, but they don't understand when you're gone, the person who answers your phone and the persons who handle their email and social media, that's somebody hooked up with the Christian Zionists. 3 days
straight with no hang on, Vinny. We're up on the break. Back on the inside. Sleeping crazy. What's becoming my new norm?
I'd pass out on the bedroom floor, sleep right through the calm before the storm.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Howdy, cousins. This is RBN host Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn, asking you to please support the Republic Broadcasting Network. Every day, RBN's mission is to use our collective voices to spread truth and relevant information, to gain a deeper understanding of the adversary, and to gain knowledge for survival against the gradual erosion of the Republic. But in order to sustain this incredible communications network, RBN needs your financial contributions. To donate, visit republicbroadcasting.org, call 1-800-724-2719, or mail your donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
It is useless to resist us.
All right, welcome back to Endpoint Sight. Patrick and Jeremy Show. We got Vinny from Indiana on the phone. And Vinny, you were mentioning Miriam Adelson's tremendous amount of influence.
Just before getting back into that.
Yeah.
So I often hear people refer to Peter Thiel as Jewish, but you know, if you look at just for instance the Wikipedia page, it doesn't make any mention of that. It seems like he's German, but he's got this South African he grew up in South Africa, which is where Elon Musk grew up. But he is gay. And I just wanted to throw that out there for I'm trying to be accurate.
Yeah, I've heard that he's a South African Jew. Because several of the people on the All In podcast, like David Sachs and the other guy, they were also South African Jews. So I don't know if Peter Thiel may not be all Jewish, maybe a Michelin, but I've heard that he is Jewish. And the article, I think, on the UNS Review said the same thing. So I'm not 100% sure, but that's what I've heard.
Yeah, there were Jews in South Africa amongst both the British, the English speaking section of the white population, but also the Afrikaners. There were Jews amongst Afrikaners, so there, South African Jew is a real thing.
And they make up quite a large portion. I'm sorry, go ahead.
From what I gather, Thiel is his parents were German, who were not long time. they didn't have a long background in South Africa, but simply had moved to South Africa maybe in the 1970s. And so he grew up in South Africa and also in what became Namibia, which had been controlled by South Africa up until the 1990s. But either way, I mean, Musk, some people might say he's Jewish. Some people say everybody's Jewish. But yeah, there's, I guess, Musk and David Sacks and Peter Thiel are this South African core of the, what do you call it, the Silicon Valley. And
they
have associated with the other. And Sacks is definitely Jewish.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, you don't see Musk or Thiel having any compassion at all for the South Afrikaners, the white Dutch farmers.
Musk did. Musk was speaking out within the past few months, saying that they're being genocided. I think he used that term.
I wonder what actions are being taken. He's really more interested in bringing like Indians in,
right,
you know, to replace programmers in America. I don't see a big move to move these white Dutch farmers into America if they'll even go. But you know, the point is that maybe he can speak a good game, but I don't see any action happening there. I have not for 10 years that I've been aware of the South Afrikaner issue. Mm. Anyway, then you have also what Vinny was mentioning, Rabbi Yehuda Kaplan, as of yesterday, the 14th of April, is nominated as special envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism. So I think the point you were bringing up, Vinny, is that free speech, specifically that against Zionism, is tremendously under threat now. And it could spread even to us on our behalf. Thanks a lot, Vinny.
And hey, see you guys.
Thank you for joining me. Stay classy. Tune in tomorrow for Patrick and Jeremy, part two on The Bugle.
If you're an avid reader or lover of history, then I invite you to purchase Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy. The Civil War was a bitter and brutal conflict, but perhaps never more so than in the state of Missouri, where the wounds of the Kansas Border War still festered. The inhumanity of the conflict was punctuated with Union war crimes, especially in the eastern Ozarks. There, civilians were targeted in an effort to subjugate the fierce fighting men battling Union forces of the region. As a result of this policy, 27,000 Missouri citizens were killed during the war. Best-selling author Paulette Giles had this to say about Blood in the Ozarks. There are a great many books on the guerrillas in Missouri during the Civil War, and almost all of them have to do with the bushwhackers in central Missouri, Quantrell, Frank and Jesse James, Bloody Bill Anderson, and others. Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy is a much-needed look at the war in southeast Missouri. Purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozarks at foothillsmedia.net. That's foothillsmedia.net to purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozarks.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.